some more. It shouldn't be.
Okay, I think we're ready to begin. Call the meeting to order. Good morning. Welcome, everyone. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board on December 17, 2009. I'd like to welcome all of those who've joined us today, either here in person or listening via the webcast. Today, the board will consider a recommendation to repropose auditing standards that would update the requirements for assessing and responding to risk in connection with an audit. The board initially proposed these auditing standards on October 21, 2008. Before we proceed with the agenda, I want to note for the record that all of the board members are here present with us today. As I've said, the first and only order of business before the board today is the staff recommendation that the board repropose auditing standards that would update the existing standards on risk assessment. And to present the staff's recommendation on this item, I'll turn the floor over to our chief auditor, Marty Bauman. Marty.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. The Office of the Chief Auditor is pleased to recommend for public comment 7 reproposed auditing standards and amendments related to the auditor's assessment of and response to risk. These reproposed risk assessment standards address core concepts underlying the audit, such as audit planning and supervision, consideration of materiality in planning and performing an audit, identifying and assessing risks of material misstatements, responding to the assessed risks, and evaluating audit results. These standards would supersede 6 of the board's interim auditing standards. The reproposed standards are intended to improve audits of issuers by enhancing the effectiveness of an auditor's assessment of and response to risk. In integrated audits, improvements in the requirements related to risk assessment should enhance the integration of the audit of financial statements with the audit of internal control of the financial reporting. In addition, the reproposed standards emphasize the auditor's responsibility to consider the risk of fraud throughout the audit and contain new requirements intended to improve an auditor's evaluation of disclosure in financial statements. These reproposed standards reflect many refinements based on comments received on the original proposal, plus additional enhancements. Because these proposed standards address many fundamental aspects of the audit process and are expected to serve as a foundation for future standard setting, we are recommending reproposal to provide an additional opportunity for public comment. Next, I would like to turn the floor over to Keith Wilson, Associate Chief Auditor, to describe key aspects of the reproposal. Before I do, however, I'd like to express my appreciation to Keith, Dion Jules, Hasnat Ahmad, Hong Zhao, Jessica Watts, and Leslie Guybert of the Office of the Chief Auditor, who are important members of the team who analyzed the comments received on the original proposal and develop these risk assessment standards we are recommending for reproposal today. I also want to thank Bob Burns and Nina Maziri-Azad of the Office of General Counsel and our colleagues in the other offices and divisions of the PCAOB for their valuable advice and contributions. Keith?
Thank you, Marty. Mr. Chairman and board members, as Marty mentioned, the proposal before you today consists of 7 reproposed auditing standards and related proposed amendments to PCAOB standards. Those 7 proposed standards are audit risk, which discusses the concept and components of audit risk, audit planning and supervision, which describes the auditor's responsibilities for planning the audit and supervising the engagement team, consideration of materiality in planning and performing an audit, which describes how the concept of materiality should be applied when planning and performing audit procedures. Identifying and assessing risks of material misstatement, which describes the auditor's responsibilities for performing procedures to to identify the risk of misstatement and the process of assessing those risks. The auditor's, the fifth one is the auditor's responses to the risks of material misstatement, which describes how the auditor should tailor the overall conduct of the audit and his or her audit procedures to respond to the risks of material misstatement. The next one, evaluating audit results, which describes the process of evaluating the evidence obtained during the audit to form the opinions to be expressed in the auditor's report. And the seventh is audit evidence, which describes how the auditor should perform audit procedures to obtain sufficient, appropriate evidence to support his or her opinion. I will discuss significant comments on and changes to each of these standards, but first, I'd like to discuss some pervasive comments received on the original proposed standards that have formed part of the basis for the changes to these re-proposed standards. Generally, commenters were supportive of the board's objectives for improving standards for risk-based audits and for improving the alignment between the board's standards for assessing and responding to risk and auditing standard number 5 on audits of internal control over financial reporting. We received several helpful suggestions for aligning the standards more closely with AS number 5. Commenters also offered several suggestions for revising other provisions of the proposed standards, and many of those commenters referred to analogous provisions of the standards of the International Auditing Insurance Standards Board as the basis for their comments. Another significant area of comment related to the board's objective of integrating the auditor's responsibilities for consideration of fraud into the original proposed standards. Some commenters supported this integration with the fraud standard. Others suggested that it's better to address fraud responsibilities in a single separate standard, and still others were ambivalent on the approach. The re-proposed standards have retained provisions related to the auditor's consideration of fraud and based on observations from the board's oversight activities, this continues to be an area where auditors at times appear to take an isolated mechanical approach to their consideration of fraud. Integrating requirements for consideration of fraud into the proposed standards emphasizes that assessing and responding to fraud risks is an integral part of the audit under PCAOB standards rather than a separate consideration. It also should prompt auditors to make a more thoughtful and thorough assessment of fraud risks and to develop appropriate audit responses. Now I'd like to discuss comments received and changes to each of the proposed standards. In the audit risk standard, after consideration of comments, we've added more discussion about risk of material misstatement at the overall financial statement level, including providing examples of those types of risks. Also, additional discussion was included about the relationship between detection risk and the performance of substantive procedures. Based on comments on this topic and observations of audit practice, it seemed appropriate to emphasize the importance of performing substantive procedures that are sufficient for the necessary level of detection risk. In the planning and supervision standard, we have revised the discussion in the standard to explicitly state that the engagement partner is responsible for planning the audit and supervising the members of the engagement team, while recognizing that he or she may seek assistance from appropriate engagement team members. After consideration of comments, the requirements for developing the audit plan regarding multi-location engagements has been revised to be more risk-focused and for integrated audits aligned more closely with auditing standard number 5. The description of the requirements for considering and working with persons with specialized skill or knowledge has been extended beyond information technology specialists. This change was based in part on comments received. However, in looking at this area, we've also identified some additional opportunities to clarify the revised requirements. Also, we've streamlined the presentation of the supervision requirements by starting with the auditor's responsibility to supervise the engagement team and then defining the elements of proper supervision. The standard on consideration of materiality has been revised to align more closely with the concept of materiality as articulated by the courts in interpreting the federal securities law. This is different in approach from the original proposed standard, which included a description of materiality based on a FASB concept statement, which is not part of the FASB's recently adopted accounting standards codification. The new proposed standard includes new requirements regarding consideration of materiality in multi-location engagements. Observations from the board's oversight activities indicated a need for specific requirements in this area. Also, the discussion in the proposed standard of the auditor's reassessment of materiality was revised to articulate a principle for determining when such reassessment is required. Regarding the identifying and assessing risk standard, commenters on this standard expressed concerns about the number of requirements in the standard and asked for more explanation of the auditor's responsibility for certain provisions of the standard. The reproposed standard retains the overarching principle that the auditor should perform procedures that are sufficient to provide a reasonable basis for identifying and assessing the risks of material misstatement. However, the reproposed standard has been revised to streamline the description and presentation of the requirements. For example, there's more consistency in the way examples and other provisions of the standard are presented. After consideration of comments, the standard has been revised to include certain provisions from auditing standard number 5 that also apply to the audit of financial statements. For example, the requirements for determining significant accounts and disclosures and the relevant assertions have been added to the proposed standard because existing PCAOB standards and the reproposed standards require those accounts and disclosures to be tested as part of the financial statement audit. Also, after consideration of comments, the standard was revised to include more discussion about the relationship between the auditor's required understanding of internal control over financial reporting and the related requirements for testing controls and in integrated audits for evaluating entity-level controls. And consistent with the objective of enhancing requirements for auditing disclosures, the new proposed standard contains new requirements related to identifying necessary disclosures and assessing risks of omitted or incomplete disclosures. Turning to the auditor's response standard, the reproposed standard was revised to describe more clearly the relationship between the auditor's risk assessments and his or her responses to risk. Linkage of risk assessments to responses is a critical feature of audit effectiveness, and commenters expressed concerns that the original proposed standard did not emphasize that linkage sufficiently. The revisions in the reproposed standard should address this concern. The original proposed standards included provisions for testing controls in both the audit of internal control and the audit of financial statements. After consideration of comments received, we decided that it was clearer to maintain all the provisions that are unique to the audit of internal control in auditing standard number 5. So the provisions regarding tests of controls in the audit of internal control were removed from this standard. On a related note, more discussion was added to the reproposed standard regarding when an auditor tests controls in an audit of financial statements. I want to emphasize here that this reproposed standard does not change the requirements regarding when tests of controls are necessary in a financial statement audit. Auditors still have the same flexibility as under the existing standards regarding when to test controls. For example, in order to reduce their substantive procedures. Turning to the evaluating audit results standard, commenters cited provisions of the standards in which they believed that additional discussion or clarification was needed. This related primarily to the provisions of the standard on accumulating and evaluating misstatements, determining misstatements related to accounting estimates, and evaluating uncorrected misstatements. We've made clarifying revisions in each of those areas. For example, the original proposed standard and the reproposed standard would require the auditor to consider both qualitative and quantitative factors when evaluating uncorrected misstatements. Some commenters stated that more explanation was needed on evaluating qualitative factors. An appendix has been added to the reproposed standard that carries forward an existing auditing interpretation regarding consideration of qualitative factors. Also, the provisions regarding the responsibilities to evaluate bias have been in the financial statements have been revised. For example, a provision was added in the reproposed standards to address situations where management identifies additional adjusting entries that offset other misstatements identified by the auditor. We think it is important to provide additional discussion on this subject because it has been a challenging area for auditors. Finally, with respect to the standard, the reproposed standard has separate specific requirements for evaluating whether financial statements contain the necessary disclosures. Discussion with our standing advisory group has indicated that financial statement disclosures warrant more audit attention, and observations from the board's oversight activities have identified this as an area where auditor performance could be improved. On the final standard, audit evidence, commenters expressed concerns about the clarity of the provisions for determining the appropriate financial statement assertions to use, and those provisions have been clarified in the reproposed standard. The staff recommends that the board issue the reproposed standards and related amendments for public comment for a period of 75 days. I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Bauman and Mr. Wilson. Are there any motions regarding this matter?
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Mr. Gradison.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board instruct the staff to release the proposed standards on risk assessment and propose conforming amendments to the board standards as recommended for public comment for a period of 75 days.
Thank you, Mr. Gradison. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Gradison and Mr. Harris. Let me begin with some comments of my own. The recommendation before the board today is to repropose a suite of seven standards that focus on the risk assessment process and on the auditor's response to identified risks. The board first published these standards for comment in October of 2008. Based on the comments received, the standards have been refined and revised. For a project of this magnitude and significance, it's important to afford the public and the profession a full opportunity to comment before taking final action, and I support the reproposal of these revised standards. A sound and sophisticated understanding of the risks of material misstatement and planning and executing the audit to respond to those risks are essential to affording investors reasonable assurance that financial statements are free of material error. For that reason, these seven standards, once they're finalized, will serve as the bedrock for much of the board's future standard setting. These standards will provide a base that focuses on appropriate risk identification and on audit planning tailored to those risks. Future standards will build on that foundation. As we've heard, in response to the original proposals, we received 33 comment letters. Those comments were generally supportive of the proposed standards, but offered many ideas for ways to enhance and improve the risk assessment framework. The revised standards are not fundamentally different in approach from the first version. The new standards do, however, reflect numerous enhancements and clarifications. I think three are particularly significant. First, the proposed standards have been revised to better align with auditing standard number 5, the standard governing audits of internal control over financial reporting. In some cases, the auditor must perform an audit of only the financial statements. In other cases, he or she must perform an integrated financial statement and internal control audit. However, the risk assessment process is basically the same, regardless of whether the task at hand is an integrated audit or financial statement-only audit. Revised standards better harmonize the risk assessment procedures with those in auditing standard number 5. Second, revised standards more explicitly emphasize the need to evaluate financial statement disclosures as part of assessing the risk of material misstatements. Consideration of whether financial statements are fairly stated includes an evaluation not just of the numbers on the face of the financial statements, but of the disclosures and the notes as well. Focusing during the planning stage on the importance of disclosures can improve the auditor's approach to testing and to evaluating audit results. As a consequence of the changes to address disclosures, the revised proposals would supersede the existing standard in this area, AU 431, which is called Adequacy of Disclosures in Financial Statements. Third, the new proposals also contain some beefed up requirements relating to the auditor's responsibility to consider the possibility of fraud. These include increased emphasis on consideration of potential management bias and of risks relating to missing or incomplete disclosures. I want to touch just briefly on two other points. First, as I noted at the October 2008 meeting, the staff began formulating these standards by looking at the comparable provisions of the International Standards on Auditing, the ISAs. While the board received support in the comments for that approach, many commenters thought we had not gone far enough and offered suggestions to further reduce differences between these standards and the ISAs. The revised proposals take some additional steps in that direction. And like the 2008 release, the document before the board today includes an appendix that provides a high-level comparison between the revised proposals and the ISAs. I hope commenters will again consider whether we've struck the right balance in this area. Second, I'm sensitive to comments that urge the board to do more to promote transparency in its standard setting. I'm certainly pleased that the staff is recommending a second comment period on these proposals. Further, I hope that, depending upon the nature of the comments we receive, we'll consider discussing these standards again with the board's standing advisory group before the standards are finalized. The SAG will be holding its next public meeting next April, shortly after the comment period on these proposals or re-proposals would end. Beyond that, I'd urge the board to continue to explore ways of making its standard setting and the thinking that underlies proposals like these more open and understandable. I'd like to join Marty in thanking all of the members of the Office of the Chief Auditor who worked so long and diligently on these proposals. I'll just single out Keith Wilson, who's been the champion of the risk assessment project for over 4 years now, and who spearheaded both the first proposal and this re-proposal. Keith, I'm afraid your work isn't over yet, but hopefully the finish line is starting to come into sight. Let me ask if any other members of the board have a comment.
Sure. Thank you, Dan. Well, I'd also like to start by thanking the staff. I certainly, a lot of hard work has gone into this, both the standards group and the Office of General Counsel. Keith, I know you've given up many late night and weekends work on this project, and it's a good project. And although we're treating it as one project, it's in fact several projects wrapped into one. Moreover, there are a number of other current projects that are affected by or will affect this project. It's been a great challenge to manage the numerous moving pieces. I cannot say that I'm completely comfortable with all the decisions reflected in the scope and context of the project. I am comfortable seeking comment, though, because I believe we're on a path to resolving those issues appropriately. We will obviously need to further develop this project before it's finalized. Moreover, as discussed in the appendix to the release, other standard-setting projects will likely result in changes to some of today's draft standards before they are finalized. For example, in addressing some of the comments on the earlier proposal, we expanded the draft requirements on the use of persons with specialized skills. What might seem to be a rather small change at first blush has introduced some awkwardness. On a practical level, it's not clear when the draft standard on supervision applies and when the existing standard on specialists, AU 336, applies. Moreover, from a policy perspective, it's not clear why we should introduce a standard on supervising persons with specialized skills without rationalizing it with our standard on specialists. As the release discusses, though, we have a standard-setting project on specialists that will likely address these problems before either standard is finalized. I also continue to have some discomfort with the description in Appendix 10 of differences between the proposed standards and certain standards the profession has developed. I don't think it's useful to elucidating our proposal, and the effort to compare our draft standards to those standards has distracted us from much more important tasks, such as comparing our draft standards to existing standards, which I think would probably be more useful. I do not see these concerns as an impediment to seeking outside comment, though. Comments could help us resolve some of these. And in the meanwhile, I believe the development process has led to improvements going forward. I'll briefly touch on some points that I hope we will keep in mind. First, in the future, I hope standard-setting projects will be focused on addressing weaknesses in standards that we identify in our inspections and other oversight activities. In the past, most of our projects have been required by the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Now that we're nearing completion of the required projects, we seem to have turned to trying to align our standards with other standards for the sake of uniformity. This type of standard setting risks spending our limited resources on matters that don't materially improve investor protection. Rather, I think our standard setters' time would be better spent debriefing inspectors and culling inspection data to identify problems that current standards don't adequately address. That's no easy undertaking, but it will help focus our projects on the most important issues. Second, I hope we will focus more in the future on our overall framework. We have an opportunity to make standards simpler with a cohesive architecture that is easy to follow, minimizes redundancy, and helps auditors focus on what's important. We obviously can't do everything at the same time, but I have concerns that to date we haven't adequately thought through how our projects should relate to each other. Thus, our current approach risks making the standards more complicated. Third, we should use our releases to explain what we want to change. This would help auditors understand our expectations and would facilitate more meaningful comment. We tend to get very few comments on our proposals, and the comments we do get usually come from auditors. The auditors' comments are very helpful, but I'm concerned that we may be making it unnecessarily difficult for other segments of the public to understand what we're proposing and to comment on it. To this end, we've added a new initiative to our strategic plan to enhance the transparency of our standard setting. That initiative calls for clear releases and other statements describing the objectives, methods, and intent of each proposal in a manner that allows the investing public and other interested parties to understand the import and effect of the proposal and facilitates meaningful public comment. If we truly commit to this initiative, it would help the general public understand what we're doing and facilitate broader participation in our standard setting. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the board's reproposing the 7 auditing standards related to the auditor's approach to assessing and responding to audit risk. I would like to thank those who took the time to review the proposed standards and provide their thoughtful comments to the board. This feedback is extremely helpful in the board's standard-setting process to ensure that auditing standards drafted and ultimately adopted by the board address the concerns of interested parties and result in improvements in audit quality. As you indicated, Mr. Chairman, we are reproposing these standards today with a comment period of 75 days. I support providing another opportunity for comments, both because of the extent of the revisions and the importance of achieving the right balance between the cost of implementing these standards and the expected benefits. I particularly want to encourage investors to comment on these reproposed standards. Only one of the 33 comment letters the board received on the originally proposed standards was from an investor. Since these standards were first proposed last year, the world has witnessed firsthand the consequences of ineffective risk management. It is clear that the loss of trillions of investors' dollars was at least in part the result of weak or non-existent risk management oversight on the part of management teams and directors in the financial industry. Risk-taking is inherent in any business, and therefore management should be able to identify, understand, and then mitigate those risks. The importance of understanding the level of business risk, whether in the financial sector or any other industry, naturally spills over into audit risk. Every audit has a risk. The risk that the auditor will express an inappropriate opinion when the financial statements are materially misstated. These standards more clearly articulate the auditor's responsibility to consider business risks as a very important element of audit risk. In other words, these proposed standards now require that the auditor obtain an understanding of the company and its environment in order to evaluate the level of risk of material misstatement in the financial statements. The standards require the auditor to do the homework necessary to identify and to assess the risk of error or the risk of fraud in the financial statements. While sound audit practices do not prevent poor business decision-making by management, in the interest of investor protection, it is, nevertheless, a step in the right direction to require the auditor to consider the company objectives and business risks when planning and carrying out the audit. Another important improvement contained in these proposed standards is the integration of an emphasis on the auditor's responsibility to consider the risk of fraud throughout the entire audit process. This emphasis on the auditor's consideration of fraud is to prompt auditors to make a more thoughtful and thorough assessment of the risk of fraud and to develop appropriate responses rather than approaching the assessment of fraud risk as an isolated exercise. The need for this type of integration has been clear based on observations made during our inspections process. These proposed standards also more effectively address the requirements for the auditor to evaluate the adequacy of financial statement disclosures. While the PCAOB's interim standards address this area of responsibility, it is to a limited extent. Our inspection process continues to identify concerns that the auditor's review of disclosures is not always effective, confirming the need to provide more information direction in this area. In response, these standards contain new requirements and increased discussion regarding the auditor's responsibility for evaluating the adequacy of the financial statement disclosures. Finally, I would like to highlight that these proposed standards give explicit direction to the auditor that the level of materiality established for the financial statements and particular accounts or disclosures should be based on quantitative and qualitative facts that would influence the judgment of a reasonable investor. This is an important improvement over the interim standards in clearly directing the auditor to consider the needs of the investor. In sum, these risk assessment standards that we are reproposing today clearly describe the board's expectations of what the auditor needs to do when planning and performing an audit based on risk assessment principles. Unique to the PCAOB, the development of these standards has been greatly informed by the findings of our inspections program. While most of the concepts are not new and will be familiar to auditors, they are more concise and better organized than they are in the current PCAOB interim standards. In short, these standards are intended to focus the auditor's efforts on those areas that have the greatest risk of creating an audit failure. As I mentioned at the outset, I support reproposing these risk assessment standards for public comment. Furthermore, I would like to see the board adopt standards in these areas as soon as possible after the end of this comment period. These standards have been a high priority for the board for some time now, and the sooner they are adopted, the sooner the quality of audits and the protection of investors will be enhanced. I also join you, Mr. Chairman, and the other board members in acknowledging the fine work done by Keith Wilson and the entire staff who have worked on these proposed standards under the direction of Marty Bowen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Mr. Gratton?
Mr. Chairman, I also want to join in thanking the staff for an excellent piece of work. I support this re-proposal going out for comment. I want to give my slant on this whole question of where this fits into the work of other standards writers. I don't think it'd be any surprise to my colleagues that I think we've missed great opportunities during the last few years in working more closely with the other two standards writers to try to minimize differences. They've moved much more quickly because of the processes that they've used in rewriting their standards, and we are scrambling, in my opinion, to catch up. But that's the road we're on, and this is an important step in that direction. If what I've said holds together, then I would make a couple of observations. First of all, I think the inclusion of Appendix 10, and we've done this before, and I think it now will be a pattern for the board in its standards writing, the inclusion of a comparison with the other two major standards writers, I think it's very useful to practitioners. Otherwise, I don't think we ought to do it. That is to say, if somebody is familiar with working for the ICES, I think it is not unreasonable for us, when we come along and say we've got a better product, and we believe we do, to indicate what the differences are and why we have made these changes. The same thing with regard to the product of the ASB. My other observation, based on what I've said already, is we're on a road which I think eventually, and I don't know when that will be, but probably some years off, will lead to our having made permanent or revised, maybe a better word, all the interim standards that were adopted back in 03. I would hope at that point the board would give serious thought attempting to open the door towards serious conversations with the other two standards writers. I'm not an auditor, but here 7 years. I look at something comes along, and if it isn't an inch thick, it's darn close to it. And this is just one of our standards. And I wonder how fast can the, not only how fast can the profession adapt to new standards as we put them out, but also what do we really expect as a practical matter is going to happen out there when there are three entirely different sets of auditing standards that folks are expected to use in carrying out their work. Whether that serves the public interest or not will be for others to determine in the future. But I just want to indicate the degree of discomfort about the direction we have been going and to suggest that, at the very least, helping practitioners understand their differences and the reasons we think we have a better product is something I hope will be continued in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Gravison. I guess as Bill has suggested, the world will soon learn that the document we're talking about here is 252 pages in length, and I'm sure it would be possible to ask at least 252 questions about it, but I'll try not to do that. But I thought there were a couple things that might be worth discussing before we go to the vote. First, we've talked about these as being foundational standards that on which other standard setting will rest, and that stimulated the people that commented to make some comments about the format and nature of our standard setting generally, kind of transcending this project. I want to get your reactions to a couple of those things. And first, some comments suggested that we ought to develop a codification, or maybe I should say a recodification of our standards. And that's something that I've been interested in for some time, too, and I've thought that perhaps, if we had a codification that more closely paralleled the ISOs, it would at least be easier for people to understand the differences between our standards and the ISOs, the differences and the similarities. What's the staff's view of codification of our standards as a project?
Chairman, integrating and codifying standards issued by the board and the interim standards adopted by the board certainly is a concept that makes sense. However, as Mr. Niemeyer has expressed, our existing standards, including in particular the interim standards, and other areas in auditing practice, indicate a lot of areas where we need to improve audit quality. And so what we have done is identified where we want to go on a priority basis with limited resources. And so in October, we put out a standard-setting agenda which laid out many standards that we felt that we had to address on a priority basis first, the result of which would be to substantially increase and improve audit quality. That is clearly the highest priority of the standard-setting group. I think as we complete that task of getting through the standards and improving audit quality in our standard settings, right, in the standards that exist, I think at that point in time or at some point in time along the way there, we should also look to the integration of standards we've issued and the interim standards that we will have amended and come up with a codification that's improved. To the extent we can start to work on that in some sort of parallel way, we'll think about that going forward. But clearly our priority is on improving audit quality.
Well, it's hard to argue with prioritizing your work in the order that best improves audit quality. As you say, I hope codification will be at least kept in the back of the mind as we go forward. Another kind of comment we got related to the form of the standards, and that people noted, and I guess it kind of seems to me that maybe over the last 7 years, every time we issue a new set of standards, the format is a little bit different than the format of the prior standards. These have objectives, I think we talked about the objectives at the earlier meeting, and the and I guess most or all of them have definition section in them. That's not something that we've necessarily done in other standards. Does the staff have a view about what a consistent format for the standards, and whether they should all be conformed to the same approach?
I fully appreciate the point being made as to the varying formats of standards that we've issued in the past, including the formats of the interim standards we adopted, plus even different formats and standards that have been issued by the board. As has been said here today, these suite of risk assessment standards are foundational in many respects, and one of those respects is that this is a format and structure that we intend to use with respect to our standard setting going forward. So for the objective definitions, I know the structural aspects and format of these standards are the structure and format that we intend to use going forward. Again, with respect to prior standards and what we'll do about that, again, I make a similar comment about our resources are first focused on our standard setting agenda that's been laid forward to improve audit quality and go through many of our standards to ensure that they say the right thing, especially the income standards, and then to bring together that structure to all of our standards. So the new standards being issued, they will follow a common structure, and at some point when we've completed our process of going through the standards to improve quality, and the other ones, we'll try to get them all under the same structure.
Yeah, I suppose I guess that's what you're saying, but conforming the format and creating a codification might be the end stage steps that would be done at the same time or as part of the same project. A couple of things about the process we're using here. These are seven, I guess we're calling them a suite of seven standards, the seven standards. Mr. Niemeyer referred to the fact that they touch other standards and they spawn other standard-setting projects. Do these all have to be adopted at once? I mean, to the extent that, probably refer to the relationship with the standard on using the work of a specialist, might it end up making more sense to adopt some of these and hold back others so that they can be conformed with yet additional standards that are going to be updated or be seen as essential that these be adopted as a package?
I think that these are essential to be adopted together because they work together very well. But let me turn to Keith and let Keith expand on that.
Yeah, I would say that these standards are very closely interwoven with one another and would need to move forward together. Trying to extract one of them would, particularly the planning and supervision standard, which you hinted at, would be something that would be very difficult to carve out separately because of the relationships that we have, that these standards bear to the standards that we would be superseding. So it would be very problematic to try and do that. What we've done instead is try and lay the foundation for these standards, realizing that there are naturally going to be touch points later on that we'll have to look at and make sure that the standards are appropriately aligned, but and on a go-forward basis as well. But I think these need to move forward together.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. I guess people will be free to comment if they have views in that area, and we can evaluate the comment.
I would like to add that I agree that certain standards, particularly the specialist standard, is one that we set on. It was on our standard setting agenda, and we're moving high on our priority list, because there is an interaction between the supervision of the audit staff and supervision of specialists engaged by the auditor as well. So right now, those specialists engaged are covered by 336, and we have that as a high priority on our standard setting agenda to address in 2010.
Another sort of process here. There's obviously been some back and forth on the board this morning about Appendix 10, which compares our standard to the ICES and to the ASBs. By a set of risk assessment standards. At least one comment said, however, that what we really ought to be focusing on is a more detailed comparison to our own existing standards so that auditors would understand better what's changing. There was a comment letter that called for, I'll quote it, direct word-for-word comparisons of proposed standards
the current interim standards so as to highlight how the proposal is intended to change current audit practice. And I can understand, particularly in a project of this magnitude, that people might feel that it's difficult to come to grips with what's supposed to change without doing that kind of word-for-word comparison. What's your reaction to that suggestion?
Well, I believe what we've attempted to do with the release, and particularly with Appendix 9 of the release, is to walk through and try and explain the significant changes that these standards would represent to PCAOB existing standards. And I would say that one of the challenges in trying to do a word-for-word kind of comparison here, particularly with this project, is because there are a lot of rather complex interrelationships between our existing interim standards and these proposed standards. So you may have aspects of five or six standards, for example, in the evaluating audit results standard, in the identifying and assessing risk standard. You again have provisions of multiple standards that have now been brought together and realigned and presented in a more direct way. So it's certainly challenging. It would be very challenging for someone to try and walk through a word-for-word comparison and look at it in that fashion. So what we've tried to do is convey the results of the analysis that we've gone through and present what we consider to be the meaningful changes to our existing standards in the release.
Well, people on the outside are looking for a quick answer to that. There's 71 pages here on the matter.
Yeah, that's right. I guess a word-for-word comparison would be 700.
Several hundred pages. Several hundred pages.
Yeah. Let me turn to another area. We got some comments that kind of made a point along the following line. The existing standards occasionally use the phrase "should consider." The auditor should consider a certain thing. I'm not sure if we've done it uniformly. We've tended to change that to should evaluate, assess may be used sometimes. I think we tended to conform more to evaluate now in the re-proposal. But we got some questions along the lines of what's the difference between considering something and evaluating something? If you're changing the verb, do you mean to change the underlying action?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, those were, I would say, somewhat technical changes. What we're trying to do, because the board has already defined the phrase "should consider" in its Rule 3101 to refer to situations in which the auditor considers performing an audit procedure, some of our interim standards that we would be replacing here have used that phrase in a different context. So they'll use it in when they're talking about considering a certain matter or considering some evidence that they found or in some cases considering risk. So what we've tried to do is use "should consider" as it's defined in the board's rule now, which necessarily means we need to come up with a different word to describe that. So if we would use "assess" if it's in the context of risk, for example. We'd use "evaluate" if it's in context of something the auditor had found during the course of the engagement. So we tried to come up with something that was a more meaningful word that was consistent with the board's existing rule.
Consider, assess, and evaluate all sound like things that go on inside your head. What are the documentation implications of any of those verbs?
Well, under the board's auditing standard number 3, the auditor is required to document procedures performed, evidence obtained, and conclusions reached. So you start from that perspective. I think, for example, one of the things we've used in these standards to try and deal with some of these issues is we've used "take into account" when we're talking about things that the auditor needs to bear in mind or think about while performing an audit procedure. So in that situation, I would expect that the auditor's thought process or reflection would be shown in the way that they document the performance of the procedure and their conclusions from the results of the procedure.
And we would list the factors that they considered
or this claim, whatever was relevant to their thought process. would be reflected in the conclusion that they'd reach. So I think it would be, we would think it would be evident from the way that they would document and summarize the results of their work. So in some of these other cases, the auditors expected to evaluate whether the financial statements or whether the necessary disclosures have been presented in the financial statements. That would be a form of conclusion that we'd expect to be documented in the work paper. So that kind of process is what we would have in mind.
Okay, let me turn to somebody else. I think you commented about in your remarks, and that's the fundamental concept of materiality. The consideration of materiality in planning and performing an audit standard contains a definition of materiality, but we're changing it between the original proposal and this proposal. The original version, I think, quoted from FASB concept statement number 2, I can read a little of it. If in light of surrounding circumstances, the magnitude of the item is such that it is probable that the judgment of a reasonable person relying upon the report would have been changed or influenced by the inclusion or correction of the item in its material. That's deleted now and replaced with the, I guess, more familiar to lawyers quotation from the Supreme Court's decision in TSC versus Northway. An omitted fact is material if there's a substantial likelihood that the fact would have been viewed by a reasonable investor as having significantly altered the total mix of information made available. Materiality is such a basic concept, and what was the thought in substituting, I guess, what you might call the accountant's definition or the lawyer's definition for the accountant's definition, and what practical consequences do you expect that to have?
Well, there were two things that caused us to change our approach here. One is the fact that the principle that we'd articulated in the original proposed standard framed so that the auditor would look to the concept of materiality as articulated in the financial reporting frameworks. And subsequent to that proposal, FASB issued their accounting standards codification and did not include their concept statement in there. So it causes one to conclude then that the concept statement itself is not part of the framework. So at that matter, then it became somewhat less of a useful definition or applicable definition. The other thing is just recognition that the standard that applies for financial statements of public companies is the standard that you refer to the court's articulation in interpreting federal securities law. So that is really the standard that carries the day. So we're just beginning with articulating that standard. Now, as a practical matter, I think what FASB tried to do was, in some ways, as you suggested, have sort of an accountant description that mirrors, parallels, I guess you'd say, that the court's articulation of the concept of materiality. So I think, to the extent that auditors have been, under any definition, thinking about the materiality from the concept of a reasonable investor, that before, which would have been appropriate, then I would, and that they would have been thinking about both quantitative and qualitative factors, then the both concepts are consistent.
I think an important point to bring out here is that we did not want to change practice with respect to the auditors with what the definition of materiality is. So we think that's an important factor. The fundamental definition, we think, is the one that the courts apply in the United States. And therefore, by going with that definition, we think that was the most critical decision in terms of making sure that nothing changed. The purpose of these standards is not to change the definition of materiality.
Yeah, that was sort of the point I was hoping to bring out, that we are not ultimately the definers of materiality. That is a judicial or perhaps legislative task, and we need a definition in order to make our standards work, but we're not trying to adjust that
definition.
Right. Which I guess then brings me to my next question. In evaluating audit results, a different standard, and Keith, I think you mentioned this in your comments, there's a statement that in order to evaluate whether an uncorrected misstatement is material, the auditor should consider quantitative and qualitative factors. this version of the standard inserts a list of 16 qualitative factors to consider in making that judgment. The factors, I must admit I didn't actually go back and do a comparison, but they remind me a little of the famous SEC staff accounting bulletin number 99, although I think they have some things in them that aren't in 99, like the cost of making the correction and the existence of offsetting effects of individually significant but different misstatements. What's the thought behind putting that list, factors list, in there, and how might or might not that affect practice?
Well, again, somewhat consistent with what Marty just said, that we are, what we're doing is retaining something that we already have in an existing auditing interpretation. We didn't develop a new set of criteria. We weren't trying to, what we were trying to do is provide information that were in our existing standards that, based on comments, it appeared that auditors would like to have some additional information about how to evaluate qualitative factors. So we're proposing to retain what we have now, not introduce something new.
So those factors were in the interim standard, and we decided to carry those forward. Again, if we didn't carry them forward, something might have been changing. So it's all on the same intent of not changing anything with respect to definition of materiality.
Okay, and yet a different area. We've spoken a little about conforming these, the risk assessment process and these standards to risk assessment under AS5. Can you comment generally about whether these standards would change or how they would change the auditor's obligation or the need for the auditor to test controls in a financial statement only audit as compared to what it is under the interim standard?
We are not changing the requirements for when an auditor changes, when an auditor needs to test controls in the audit of financial statements. We've essentially retained the same kind of flexibility, the same decision-making process that exists now in our current auditing standards and the interim standard that we had adopted. So there are no changes in that respect.
Is there an increased obligation to understand the controls in a financial statement only audit as part of risk assessment?
No, not really. The existing standards require the auditor to obtain a sufficient understanding of internal control to plan the audit. So, and there's explanation in the existing standards for what that means to have a sufficient understanding to plan the audit. So, we have essentially we have a similar approach in this standard here. We say that you have to have a sufficient understanding of internal control in order to identify and assess the risk of material misstatement and to plan additional procedures. Very similar type concept to what's in our existing standards. So, you know, to the extent that an auditor is performing an integrated audit as opposed to an audit of financial statements, one would expect that in order to be able to get enough evidence to form the opinion, a separate opinion on internal control, that they may need to look at some aspects of internal control more thoroughly. But for an audit of financial statements only, it's quite similar in most respects to what their obligations are now.
I have another 247 questions on my list, but I think maybe I'll stop at this point. Any other questions or comments? Are we ready to vote?
I've got a question.
Steve, Mr. Hare?
I've got 131 questions. I will just reduce them to one. And Keith, now directing, or Marty, directing your answer specifically to investors. Why do you believe investors should consider these standards an improvement over existing and international standards?
Well, I would say there are a few very important things to think about from an investor perspective. One is, and probably the most obvious one, is our focus on integrating the consideration of the risk of fraud and responding to that as a core central part of the audit process. That's a very important thing. Some of the additional requirements and attention our standards give to the area of evaluating management bias, I think, is very important, and also to areas around evaluating disclosures. I think those are all very important areas that one could point to specifically. And just more generally, I think what these standards represent a very a major step forward, at least for our standards, is we tried to stop and think, drawing from the experience and observations we have through the board's own activities, about the things that help drive an effective risk-based audit. So in having that base of knowledge to draw from, to be able to assess the risk, to find what the risks are, and to have a reasonable basis for assessing them, and to link in their audit work to those risks, and then to also to step back at the end of the process and look at all the evidence that they have, whether it supports or contradicts their assertions in the financial statements, and draw a conclusion based on all the evidence they have in an objective way. I think all of those, I think, are provide much clearer direction or a step forward from our standards.
When would you like to see this process finalized? I mean, we've got a 75-day comment period. I'm totally supportive of bringing this to a vote as a package. But you've had now a number of variations on a theme. You've received a number of comments. I mean, we can put these things out in perpetuity and continue to get comments. Ideally, when do you envision closure from the standard setting division to this project? I mean, I know we're going to get additional comments, but after this next round, do you think that you'll be prepared to recommend to the board that we just vote out a final proposal?
I'll comment on that. Our goal is for these standards to be effective for audits beginning after December 15, 2010, so for audits effectively in 2011. So that's our goal. Would be, we think we've been very responsive to the comments that were received in the original proposal. We think we've issued a very good set of reproposed standards here. We, of course, will be we'll be very cognizant of the comments that come in and be very careful in assessing and analyzing them. But our goal would be to if possible, to go forward with these standards or whatever modifications we might have to make and make them effective for audits beginning after December 15, 2010.
Thank you.
If there's no other discussion, we're ready to vote. The motion is to publish these seven reproposed standards for public comment for 75 days. All in favor of approving the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? There are none opposed. The ayes have it and the motion carries. There's no further business, so that concludes our agenda for today, and this open meeting is now adjourned. Thank you. We'll reassemble for the closed meeting in 5 minutes.